Cook the Goose. My name's Chase.
And my name's David.
And welcome to RTR Forward, where we talk about everything and anything. Return to Ravnica Forward, that's Pioneer, Historic, Standard, and other things. And we've got some interesting topics for everybody today. First off, we're going to talk about Pioneer. This last Monday, we did have a BNR announcement. What did it say, David?
It said exactly nothing, as in there's no bans.
No bans?
It did have words in it.
Actually, I don't think it had any words in it from what I remember. I don't think they had any synopsis as to what they're watching, how do they think the format's going, nothing. Pure silence.
Yeah. I mean, there was a post, but I don't think they talked about anything.
There was the initial post, hey, we're not banning anything. So the question is, you know, how much longer will we continue to get these daily or weekly bans?
I think the BNR weekly announcements are going to end after the new year.
Yeah, I believe so. I think once Theros Beyond comes out, we'll see an end to those for sure. So before we move on, quick question for David. So we talked about in our last episode, Secret Lairs. David, did you buy a Secret Lair?
Well, you know, I looked at them, and then I looked a little more, and then I said no.
Good for you.
I bought zero of
them. Zero of them? Wow, what a champ. Your boy Chase cracked pretty quickly. I made it through 5 days, but I'll tell you what, 6th day, got me good. Kaleidoscope killers. Maybe that was the 7th day, but it got me good.
Kitty Cats was the 7th day, so.
Okay, yeah. So I ended up purchasing the Kaleidoscope Killers. I just really like the cool arts, and I like that this is the best value out of all the sets by far. So I'm hoping to get some nice trade value out of them. And supposedly, the multicolored walkers, stained glass walkers, apparently only multicolored walkers appear in the Kaleidoscope Killers. So you get a higher chance of getting a Teferi or Nicol Bolas.
Oh, so you haven't gotten it yet?
No, I haven't gotten it yet, no.
Okay. I was like, what'd you get?
I got the shipping confirmation this morning.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure it'll appear in the next week or so. So stay tuned. We'll find out what I get. I'm hoping for a Teferi because I'm going to flip that boy so quick. But yeah, so Secret Lairs supposedly, according to a post today by Mark Rosewater on his Tumblr, saying that Secret Lairs were incredibly successful. So that means they're going to come back in 2020. What are they going to entail? Are they going to be aimed towards a different format? I don't know. I'm excited, though, to see what they do with it.
You mean to tell me that Wizards selling like 5 cards for $30 was successful?
It was. It was incredibly successful. So we're definitely going to see it again, for sure. But yeah.
So anyway, I think we need to go on to our next topic.
Wee-woo-wee-woo-wee-woo-wee-woo! It's reveal time! You heard it, ladies and gentlemen. Theros Beyond Death has arrived. We've got our first, I guess, 3+, you know, 5 other reveals today. Some of them were leaked in the past, so but we got some confirmation that what we saw in the past was, in fact, correct. So I'm excited. Are you excited, David?
I think I'm less excited than you are.
I'm really excited. I love Theros. Theros was my first set. I played back in the beginning of Theros, Born of the Gods, Journey of the Nyx, so I have a very, very soft spot in my heart for Theros.
Well, and I will say, just in general, I feel like you are way more excited in general about spoilers than I am.
You're not wrong. I'm always the first one to post them basically anywhere, just letting people see them and everything. It's great. So, first spoiler of the day, Ashiok has arrived. We see them with a new mythic planeswalker. They are 5 mana, 3 blue and a black for a 5 loyalty planeswalker. And this is Ashiok, Nightmare Muse. Has 3 abilities, not 4, just 3. Seeing them, you know, trying to be a little more balanced in planeswalkers. You know, we had that Oko flat fiasco, but let's find out what Ashiok does. They have a +1, create a 2/3 blue and black nightmare creature token with whenever this creature attacks or blocks, each opponent exiles the top 2 cards of their library. A -3, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, then that player exiles a card from their hand. And -7, you may cast up to 3 face-up cards your opponents own from exile without paying their mana costs. Absolutely. I love this card. I love this card so much. I'm going to slot it right into any blue-black deck I'm going to build in the next 3 months. I love their +1. I love that, you know, even though, you know, Teferi does it better, that minus three is still pretty good, because if they're empty-handed, you're basically exiling it. So it can get around a lot of things. So what do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, it seems good. It doesn't seem overly broken. I mean, it costs 5 mana as opposed to the 3 mana walkers that get complained about a lot. In recent memory, I guess Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, was a 5 mana walker that was complained about quite a bit. But I don't think that card was ever broken. Annoying? Sure. But there's a lot of cards that are annoying.
Yeah, no, I think it was very annoying to play against. But so do you think Ashiok is going to be a new 5 mana walker that's going to be annoying to play against?
No, I think it's fairly balanced. I don't think it's going to hit and I'm going to groan every time it hits the board.
Nah, I don't think so. I think it offers the pretty generic offerings that planeswalkers offer. They have one ability that creates a board presence, another ability that gets rid of something, and then this one does kind of break the curve with its third ability being able to trigger within two turns of it being out, and depending on how many cards you've exiled from your opponent's hands, you could play up to 3 of them, which is that's pretty neat. Gets me a little excited. What kind of other exiling shenanigans you can do? Because from what it looks like, it says you may cast 3 face up cards your opponents own from exile, so it's not necessarily exiled by Ashiok. So we get into really nice exile effects. We can just play maybe creatures or potentially gods. We're going back to Theros that have been exiled. We can play them. So I think it's going to be a solid card for sure. Maybe like a one or two of in some decks. Maybe even a 3 of. I don't know. So what's the next card, David?
Next card, Elspeth, Sun's Nemesis. She fights the sun. You can talk about the lore behind that, because I have no clue what it's talking about.
So she does hate the sun, but I'll talk about it in a second.
Okay, but she costs 2 generic, white and a white, and she comes in with 5 loyalty, and she has 3 minus abilities, which is interesting. So she has a minus 1, up to 2 target creatures you control get plus 2, plus 1 until end of turn. And then minus 2, create 2 1-1 white human soldier creature tokens. And minus 3, you gain 5 life. And then she also has a static ability, which seems pretty decent, which is called Escape, which I'm assuming is a new mechanic.
I've never heard of that mechanic before, so I'm going to assume it's going to be new.
Perfect. So Escape is worded as it costs 4 generic, a white and a white, exile 4 other cards from your graveyard, and then you may cast this card from your graveyard for its escape cost.
Seems pretty good. I know when she was originally leaked, people were like, oh, this Planeswalker's terrible. And I'm seeing it today. People are still saying this Planeswalker's terrible. Trust me, I think this Planeswalker is actually pretty decent. I think the archetype that she's going to kind of fit into is going to be very limited. But I think if we get ourselves a nice, mono-white weenie deck going around, she might be a pretty decent top end. She provides a nice stabilization by creating tokens. She can get in a lot of damage by buffing your creatures that are already out on the field. She can save you from maybe dying by gaining you some life. And that escape ability, really, really nice, because if you're just, drawing blanks, you're empty-handed, playing mono-white weenie, your graveyard is probably full of creatures or spells or anything, and you can just bring her back. Keep bringing her back and just making more and more advantage.
Yeah, it seems great because, I mean, even after paying her escape cost, it doesn't exile her or anything like some returning mechanic.
Yeah, so she, as long as your graveyard is just getting filled up, you're just going to see her come back more and more. So I think she's a good card for sure. I think people are really we're coming off that wave of Oko and some of the M20 walkers. We're kind of and War of the Spark. We're coming off that wave. Power level seems a little more stable this time around for sure. But that's not saying we haven't really played with the cards yet, so we don't actually know. People thought Oko was not broken when he was spoiled. So
there were planeswalkers in War of the Spark.
There were planeswalkers in the War of the Spark.
Must have missed it.
36 of them, I think. I don't know.
All right, what's the next card, Chase?
So this card's a buy a box promo. That means you can only get this card if you buy a box of Theros Beyond Death from your local gaming store. So support your local gaming store. You can pick up a copy of this card. This card is Athreos, the Shroud Veiled. He is a god. He's a returning god. He's the white-black god, so fitting. He costs 4 and white and black, so he is a 6 mana god creature slash enchantment. He's a 4/7. He's got the very generic, you know, god abilities. He's indestructible. He has the devotion clause where I believe it's if your devotion to white and black is equal to or greater than 7, then he's a creature. If not, he just remains an indestructible enchantment. He also has, at the beginning of your end step, put a coin counter on another target creature, and whenever a creature with a coin counter on it dies or is put into exile, return that card to the battlefield under your control.
I'm using quarters for that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No. fitting. Indeed, it's very fitting. I really like this card. This card was definitely aimed towards Commander. I would love to play this as my Commander. Just very solid value. From what it looks like, is you can put coin counters on any creature you want. So you can start killing your opponent's creatures and just bring them back onto your side. And it's really no harm to you. This effect happens at the beginning of your end step on each of your turns. So I think it's just straight value.
Yeah, seems fun, that's for sure.
Will this be playing Standard, though?
It's tough saying.
It is tough saying. I mean, we did just see Kenrith, who supposedly is seeing playing Standard. He sees playing the Jeskai Fires deck.
Yes. Yeah, he's pretty decent in there, too.
It's potential that Athreos could see play, but I definitely believe this is definitely aimed towards Commander, for sure. And along with these three reveals, we also got the basic lands of the set, which are, David?
They're Nykthos, full art lands.
Oh, yeah. I had to teach David that term. He looked at him. He goes, they're just the mana symbols. There's no land on them. They're Nykthos. Have you ever been to Nykthos?
No. Me, personally? No.
Probably not. So Nykthos is the realm in Theros, where I guess the gods reside and the gods gain their power and hold their domain. So it is a like starry dust like world, and that's what these lands are looking to capture by having dusty star formations of the different mana symbols. And I really like these. This is honestly the most full art land we've received in a black border set so far. It's full border. It's about as full border as the unstable lands are. There is no border.
Did they say that all the lands are going to be full art, or is it just kind of like Amonkhet was, where like one in every four is full art?
No, so there is an official word, but I believe that these are going to be like the Battle for Zendikar full art lands, where you're going to have one in every pack.
So do you think the arts that they revealed today are going to be the only arts?
Yeah, I think so.
Huh. Intriguing.
It is intriguing. I'm excited for it. I think they look awesome, and I can't wait to sleep them up. But as for that, that's kind of where we're at right now with our Theros Beyond Death spoilers, or more so reveals. They weren't spoiled. They were revealed. I know spoilers is a dirty term these days. People, you don't want your hard-earned content creator reveals to just get taken away from you. It really sucks when they do get leaked and stuff like that for people, but they are reveals, and they've been revealed by, I think it was GameSpot or GamePost or something like that.
I think you're right with GameSpot.
Some kind of gaming website. So yeah, pretty exciting stuff. I'm sure we'll. I don't know when spoilers begin. I think they begin next week or the week after. I know Theros Beyond Death releases. I think it's the week of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so the 21st. Something like that of January. I think the pre-release is the weekend before. But yeah, so it's coming up pretty quick. We're definitely going to start seeing spoilers soon, and we're definitely going to cover them here for sure. But that's about enough for those reveals for today. We're going to kind of move it under into our next topic.
Yep, scooting along. We're going to go into a little bit of Mythic Championship 7 discussion. So did you watch any of Mythic Championship 7, Chase?
I watched a bit. I haven't watched the Mythic Championships in general as religiously as I did the Pro Tours. I don't know. I'm kind of an outlier, I guess, but I just really like watching Paper Magic. so than digital Magic. But
not every Mythic Championship is.
Most of them have been. I do remember there was one or two that was.
No, I think majority have been on paper, actually.
Really?
Yes. Huh.
I don't know. I just feel like recently a lot of them have been digital. I think the only one that was paper was like a modern. Might have been a modern.
There was at least like three, because the first one that Autumn Burchett won was paper.
Okay. I watched that one.
And I don't know for sure, but like they were showing past Mythic Championships during like the commercial breaks, if you want to call them that. And I didn't see. I'm not going to say I didn't see any that were digital, but majority of them were paper Magic.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe it's just the fact that we've had like three Mythic Championships in the last like 3 months, that in every single one of them were digital, because it kind of felt like, so this has been the longest standard we've ever had, and this standard has only been around for 3 months, because we had the Field of the Dead Oppressed standard. And that was the first Mythic Championship when Throne of Eldraine was released. So Field of the Dead was king. Then we saw the Oko one, which was the last one. And then this most recent one was another standard championship.
Yeah, the whole Mythic Championship thing just confuses me now.
It's
like, because it used to be there was one Pro Tour a set, mm-hmm. and that's what it was.
And now there seems to be like one every month. And I know next weekend is Worlds.
Is it next weekend?
I think it's next weekend. I know it's not close to Christmas, but I know it's within the next week or two.
I thought it was in like February.
No, it's always in December. Because in the old pattern, you'd had a Pro Tour per set, usually rotated format, so not everyone was standard. And then you had Worlds, which was in December. But this year, it just feels like we've been jam-packed with championships so far. But anyways, this championship, quite a bit different from the last one. Not 69% Oko, because Oko is dead.
Yeah, it was 0% Oko.
0% Oko. I don't even think, even if somebody tried to bring Oko, they'd be like, get out of here. What are you doing? It's a bad card. Get out of here. He's broken. He's real broken.
Somebody will probably correct us and say, no, the Oko from the dual deck. Somebody had that in one of their decks.
No, it's Oko from the dual deck. You know, the one that's, you know, six mana or something, and he does some things and turns into creatures and stuff. Yeah, that's the one I'm playing in my deck, in my Simic ramp deck. That way, when I cast an Oko, maybe they'll still concede.
I guess we're going to be more so focusing on the top eight deck lists.
Yeah, since I didn't really pay attention to this one as much. I definitely paid attention to the top eight for sure.
Right. I know there was a lot of, as far as the field goes, there was a lot of Fires decks. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of cat combo decks of different varieties.
I mean, there were a lot of flavors of Fires decks. I saw Jund Fires, Jeskai Fires. Well, I guess there's only so many red combinations.
Well, I think there was like a five color as well.
There was a five color Dipmizzet Fires. So there were definitely different flavors of both that and the cat deck. There was Rakdos cats, Golgari cats, and Jund cats.
Yep. And then we also saw Flash decks, Simic, and Izzet.
Simic proving that it's the better version. Izzet just kind of fell behind. And I think it's just because green is still so powerful that just having green in your deck makes it really good. And you can tell by the top eight, there were a lot of decks with green in them. How many decks did not have green? Just one. Jeskai Fires. It's the only deck without green in the top eight.
You know, I didn't look at that until you just said it.
Yeah, even though they banned a lot of green cards recently, green is still really powerful. It is still the best color in Standard, and that's for sure. If you're not pairing green in your deck, then your deck's just not going as far and not doing as much stupid stuff.
Yeah, you got that right. But basically, so Jund Sacrifice won Mythic Championship 7. It was P-Tor...
Golgari, something yes. like that.
I'm not sure exactly how
the
memer
of the Pro Tour of the Mythic Championship. That's what they call him, because he always emotes and his opponents always mute him.
Can't say that I blame him. But yeah, Jund Sacrifice won. He beat Simic Flash, I think, three times in the top eight.
Yep.
So probably not a great matchup for Simic Flash.
So from what I've heard, is there's kind of there's three decks right now in the top tiers, and each of them counters the other in a way. So Jeskai Fires is really good against Jund Sacrifice. Just the amount of removal and just tempo and the fact that it can combo kill so quickly just makes it just really good against a deck that kind of just dirtles and sacrifices cats and gains advantage over time. Jund Sacrifice decks are really slow, typically. It depends on what variant running of it, but I think the one that ended up winning the Mythic Championship was a pretty slow deck for the most part. Simic Flash, really good against Jeskai Fires, because Jeskai Fires, if you don't know what Fires of Invention does, it doesn't let you cast spells on your opponent's turn, so you have no way to interact with your opponent. It's basically playing Hearthstone by yourself.
Well, and that and Simic Flash just runs so much counter magic that it just counters all your stuff, and because of, I don't want to call it necessarily greedy, but they rely on fires to get their five drops out, and their five drops are three red and three blue costed, so it's really hard to get the mana right for them to just cast them regularly. So yeah,
they're very mana intensive. It's a very mana color intensive deck for sure.
Right.
Without the fires, you're definitely at a disadvantage. I've played this deck quite a bit on MTG Arena, and I've just, when you don't have fires, it just feels bad. Just because just so many things, you have to be more conscious of what lands you're getting when you're, you know, scrying or, you know, fetching with Fabled Passage, because you're like, what if I don't draw fires? Stuff like that. And the fact that Simic Flash can just, you know, go over you and just counter everything you play. Sure, you resolve a Teferi. Okay, fine. I have creatures that will beat it down. So, really good deck. And then the third deck, obviously, Jund Sacrifice. Jund Sacrifice, it's supposedly pretty good against Simic Flash. I don't know, David. Did you look at the results?
I mean, I think Simic Flash has a better matchup against Jund than Jeskai Fires has against Simic Flash. I'll say that.
Okay. I can agree with that. I think Simic Flash has such a good matchup against the Jeskai Fires deck in comparison to its matchup against Jund. For sure. I think Simic Flash is really good deck. I'm kind of sad that it's a deck, because I didn't like Mono Blue Tempo back before rotation, just because it was just so good and just countered everything. Kind of, well, I am a guy that likes to play control decks. I don't like when my things get countered. It sucks.
But that's the thing. Simic Flash is not a control deck.
It's a tempo deck. So not only does it do control better than control, but it kills you faster than control. So it's just a better control deck. So no reason to run blue-white, which there were. I was pretty impressed. There were a few blue-white decks
in the
Mythic Championship. One of them had like a record of 7-2. The other one had like a record of 1-8. So didn't have a very good win percentage. There was a sneaky little addition. So we had 3 Simic Flash lists, 2 Jund Sacrifice lists, a Jeskai Fires list, which we talked about. There was also Golgari Adventures and Simic Ramp. So Golgari Adventures was a deck that was played and was pretty strong in the Oko era, but Oko was just too good, and all the Simic decks were just really good. But Golgari Adventures was just a pretty good deck still. It's definitely not as good as it used to be, because they lost Once Upon a Time. Once Upon a Time allowing them to grab their Innkeeper on turn one, having Innkeeper on turn one. As I actually listened to an interview by one of the guys that made it in the top 8 that had the Golgari Adventure deck, he says it's a completely different game if you have Innkeeper on one or if you don't. He said the deck just plays so much better with Innkeeper on one, and it kind of sucks that Once Upon a Time is no longer in the format, kind of allowing you, like, you can't have it anymore, really. It's less reliable on turn one, but just having it on turn one is just so good, because every creature you play on that deck is going to draw you a card if you have Innkeeper out. Just a all around just solid build, and it made its way all the way to the top 8. I think this version also ran the War of the Spark card. I can't think of it, David. It's the Golgari one that destroys things of each type.
Oh, Casualties of War.
Casualties of War. Yes, it ran that card. I think Jund Sacrifice also ran.
Jund Sacrifice also ran.
Proved to be a pretty good 6 mana card when it didn't get countered by Simic Flash.
Yeah, and when it goes against Jund. When it goes against a Fires deck, it's just like, oh, hey, wipe out all your good stuff.
Kill your Teferi, gonna kill your Fires Invention, gonna kill that land that lets you get either 3 red or 3 blue. I'm gonna kill your Cavalier, and it's your turn. Yeah, I think it's a good card. I think it's a really fun card.
And then rounding out the top 8, we also had another Simic deck. It was not Simic Flash. It was, they called it Simic Ramp, which is what it was. It was trying to play Arboreal Grazer on one and some other ramp spell, and then turn three throw a Nessa out and have big Hydroid Crasseye. And
so it was trying to emulate the Simic ramp decks of the past, so the ones that were recently banned. It was a lot of the same components. It proved to be pretty good, but I watched some of the matchups. It's not good against Simic Flash. It's not good in the first game. It's decent in the second game because then they can kind of bring in some of their counters, but it's still just not a very, very favorable matchup just because of the amount of tempo that Simic Flash has.
Right.
In comparison, just being able to bounce your Goose and bounce your Mana Dorks, any of them, is just really good. Throws them off. And once they lose their Mana Dork, they're kind of set off, and you know, you can really set them off a turn.
For sure.
So. But yeah. In relation to our Mythic Championships, we also, like as we said earlier, the Worlds is happening later this month. And Worlds, for the first time ever, is going to be played on MTG Arena.
Well, the fact that it's on MTG Arena is very interesting because that pretty much means that they're not going to draft. I mean, they're not going to let a bunch of pros draft against the bots and just have stupid decks.
So I wouldn't mind watching that.
It would be interesting. It would basically just be who got the best bomb and
yeah,
go from there. So I don't know. With it all being just constructed play, makes it a little different. I don't know. The thing that I will say about drafting, especially in paper for Mythic Championships or whatever tournament it is, actually watching like the draft process is pretty boring because you're focusing on one person and
yeah, and you can't really see the perspectives of everybody as they go around the table, like, hey, we're gonna watch this guy for a second,
right?
And then, hey, let's watch the guy to the right of him that's passing himself. What is he grabbing? Why is this guy not getting these certain colors?
Yeah,
stuff like that.
And I will say, with Arena, it does lead to, if they ever do get a full actual draft pod in Arena, it could lead to some interesting coverage down the line, because you could visit a person that's drafting and they've all got those headphones on, so you could ask them a question and be like, well, what are you thinking about your picks from the first pack or whatever? I mean, they could potentially do stuff like that.
I agree. In a way, they kind of already do that in a roundabout way, you know, after they've drafted the deck. Like, how do you feel about that deck? Like, why did you choose this card? Stuff like that. But I don't think it's as in-depth as it could be if they went with a route like that. But I think the biggest question people have is with them transforming Worlds into an MTG Arena tournament, people are starting to get worried that, you know, with everything becoming MTG Arena, are they going to start cutting more and more paper coverage? Because we've seen them, they cut coverage for all of our GPs like a year ago. So there's no video coverage of it now. It's just text coverage. There used to be video coverage at every GP. Streamed on Twitch, but now you're getting less and less of that, and now you're seeing more and more of these, you know, Mythic Champions, these Pro Tour-esque events being MTG Arena only. So a lot of people begin to express concern that, you know, is Magic stepping away from paper and competitive events?
For competitive events?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure they are.
Oh, I agree.
They want to. It's easier to watch, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to produce.
So it's easier to watch. It prevents cheating because you literally cannot cheat in MTG
yep.
Arena. And trust me, we've had a lot of cheaters playing Pro Tours.
And even not necessarily cheating, but
misplaying.
Just misplaying, yeah, and
missing triggers.
It doesn't get caught. And
Then you get the judge comes over and then you're like, oh great, this will be interesting. And then you see like them talk for a second. You're like, what are they talking about? And then you see like a guy like rewind three turns and then like, yeah. So I do think that MTG Arena is better to watch for competitive, but the question is, are we gonna see more than just standard? Because we've seen a lot of standard recently.
Yeah, that would be the thing, is they couldn't do any modern pro events right now because no one's gonna watch MTGO.
No one wants to watch that. I think I don't know if this has been confirmed, but I'm fairly certain there's going to be a Pioneer Mythic Championship next year.
I would hope so.
I would hope so as well. I know all the other companies like Star City Games and Channel Fireball have jumped on the Pioneer bandwagon, actually replaced most of their legacy events with Pioneer. So I'm excited for that. But we'll have to see what their plans are for next year. But I just feel like, the last few months of, or at least the last half of the year, have been, all of MTG Arena focused for the tournaments, which like it makes it nice for viewing. It definitely allows new players to come in and kind of maybe get a better idea of how things work. You can hover over the cards on the screen, which is really cool. They added some new assets for that, so that's cool. But I don't know. So alongside that, standard bannings. So it's been a little while, been a few weeks. We had those dreaded cards banned from standard once again. That was Oko, that was Once Upon a Time, and the Veil of Summer.
Yes, I believe those were those were all banned at once, and then Field of the Dead was banned. I don't know, a month before that, yeah. Something like that.
So what do you think of standard now?
I think standard's fine. I mean, so you look at it from like a competitive standpoint, and I mean, having three quote-unquote tier one decks is pretty healthy.
Yeah.
But then you also have other decks that can beat the tier one decks. It's not like the tier one decks are just
unbeatable.
Mm-hmm. So from a more casual look at it, it's definitely better.
Yeah. So with this standard and with most formats, I kind of like for there to be like, like a tier system, and not necessarily a tier system, but sects. So you have the control sect, you have the aggro sect, and you have the mid-range section. Okay. One always counters the other. It's just, and aggro always beats mid-range, aggro always beats control. Control always beats mid-range. Mid-range always beats aggro.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
In theory.
So that's just the theory. So we have three decks that just all counter each other pretty well. You don't have just one deck being super oppressive, or just two decks with one being very oppressive and the second one just being pretty decent against it, like we've seen in previous standards. So I think, to be honest, the standard is pretty healthy. Seeing the top eight lists. Yes, we saw a lot of Simic. I think it's still really good, and I think this is just the aftermath of, Simic was good, Simic's still good, let's just play Simic cards, let's not test, or let's not play with new things. And I think what we're going to see is, this continuous meta happen. Maybe it evolves, maybe it doesn't. We'll see what people bring for the worlds, and see what new innovations people think of. And then Theros will release, and then we'll have new cards to play with and new archetypes. So I think we're in a pretty good spot after, the last 3 months of just absurdity.
And going along with the standard bans, I know Pioneer didn't see as much coverage or articles and stuff in the last week because of Mythic Championship, but what do you feel about the Pioneer play environment at this point?
So, I don't know. I've heard, but I didn't actually look, but I didn't. The 5-0s that usually come out on Mondays for Pioneer Leagues didn't actually come out on this Monday. So nobody really knows what has been really doing well other than, just playing. But from what I've seen, Nexus has become really good. I've seen Nexus more and more. Just a really good deck. Mono Black, still pretty good. Not as good as it was. Obviously, losing Smuggler's Capture was a big hit for it. I think Once Upon a Time was also a big hit as well for some of the decks. I know it looks like, Black-Green Counters kind of fell off the map. It hasn't really been seeing much play, at least it hasn't received as many, hasn't gotten as many 5-0s. It hasn't been seeing as much play in the higher levels of tournaments. But to be fair, there hasn't really been any tournaments recently since the bans. So, who's to say? We don't know. But all I can tell you, though, is Nexus is really good. And I told you it would be.
Well, and Nexus is probably the next thing on the chopping block to get banned, honestly. But at the same time, a good aggro deck a lot of times is going to be able to at least get Nexus to the point where you either got to go off this turn or you die next turn.
Yeah, I agree. I think Control is also getting a little better now. Obviously, Nexus kind of takes Control's place in a way. Nexus is like a Control combo deck, whereas, you know, we have standard blue-white Control and Jeskai Control and Esper Control and stuff like that, which are more of just, you know, pretty generic Control plan. And our aggro decks are good. They took a little bit of a hit. Smuggler's Copter is seeing play in every aggro deck as just a nice just looting platform. Aggro decks are still strong. I think at this point, I'm not really sure which one's better, red or black. Just smash them together and see what happens.
Yeah. And Smuggler's Copter is not what makes aggro aggro. Yeah. It just makes aggro more consistent.
Yes. And so Smuggler's Copter is the tool that like aggro needs in a way. So aggro, one of the biggest problems with aggro is you know, you have all these low drops, you have these very aggressive plays, you empty your hand. Okay. Well, then you're kind of in top deck mode at that point. Well, recently, in the last year, we got stuff like Light Up the Stage, which is a pseudo draw spell for red decks, which has really helped a lot of red aggro decks kind of get up on their feet. Because, like I said, card draw, biggest problem of aggro decks. You kind of just empty your hand and then you're top decking. Looter Scooter or Smuggler's Copter allowed you to kind of, you know, handle your draws a little differently. So, number one, it was a beater against Control because it's not a creature on your opponent's turn. So if they have a board wipe, it's not going to die. So you could play any creature. You could top deck a creature. If you were playing mono black, you could bring a creature back from your graveyard to the battlefield and just crew it.
Yeah. Paired with Mutavolt, you've got a creature on your turn automatically.
Yeah. So, and what you could do is just attack with the Smuggler's Copter and turn the lands that you just keep top decking into actual gas. Yep. So I definitely agree that it wasn't what made aggro. It's what made aggro more efficient.
Aggro's supposed to have a trade-off of, well, I'm trying to actively kill you, but I fizzle out at some.
Yeah. So I definitely, other than Nexus of Fate, I don't mind where Pioneer is at this point. I definitely think that we will see something about Nexus of Fate, especially once more 5-0 results come out and more tournaments happen. But if it doesn't happen this month, it'll definitely happen at the beginning of the year next year.
Moving on to our next topic. So, I believe it was yesterday, Wizards released their Magic Arena State of the Game December 2019 article. Yeah, exciting stuff. So, the first thing they talked about was the recent patch and how it has improved performance for a lot of users. They acknowledge that it's still not perfect, which is a good thing. So they're still working on that, but from the numbers they posted, which, I mean, they're posting their own numbers, so who knows how accurate it is, but from the numbers they posted, it has gotten a lot better in the last month. So that's a good thing. And then they also announced a lot of events and other happenings. So the first thing they talked about was Brawl-a-days. Chase, what is Brawl-a-days?
Is that a word?
Oh, God. It is now.
I guess so. But happy birthday, as Frosty the Snowman says. It's the Brawl-a-days. You get to play Brawl whenever you want for the next month. But here's the catch. You know, Frosty, he's got to pay for ice packs and coolers somehow. Frosty needs some dough, some of that money. And so the best way to help support Frosty is by paying Wizards of the Coast either 10,000 coins or 10,000 gold. Or 2,000 gems to play Brawl.
Which is equivalent to, it's hard to say exactly what that's equivalent to, because if you were to buy $100 worth of gems at a time, and this is North America prices, so sorry if you're...
Or the dollar price.
Yeah, the dollar price, let's put it that way. But for $100, you get 20,000 gems. So if you were to buy gems in that sort of bulk, it's $10, and that's the minimum it is. Yeah. Other than the, I mean, gold's technically free, but, I mean, it's also equivalent to packs at some point, so.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can now no longer have to wait for Wednesday evenings. You can play Brawl whenever you want.
Well, and that was another thing. I don't know if they said it or not, but is Brawl Wednesday still a thing? I'm assuming it is.
I don't know.
I don't think they specifically said that it's not.
I'm fairly certain they're going to say nothing and then just not enable it and just be like, yeah, Brawl's right. You can already play Brawl. It's right here. That just seems like something Wizards would do.
You do get a whole card, though, for your first win in the Brawl.
A whole card? What is that card?
It is... Is it Reese? Is that how you pronounce
Rise.
It? Rise. Rise? Okay. Rise the Redeemed, which costs a green or a white. It's got that hybrid mana. And it's a 1-1 with a couple of abilities on it. The first ability is you pay 2 and a green or a white, and you tap them to create a 1-1 green-white elf warrior creature token. And then his other ability is pay 4 green or a white, so 6 total mana there. And you tap him, and you create a creature token for each token you control when that ability resolves. So, and this card sees commander play already. I mean, it's not coming out of left field. And I'm assuming he's going to be playable in Historic now?
Yes, so he will also be available in Historic. So you can slot him into whatever tokens deck you got running around. Play with him if you want, but...
All I'm saying is David's probably going to use a wild card to get his Rise and save his 10,000 gold.
Yeah, I mean... You can always challenge me, David.
Yeah.
You can always challenge me. We can just play that way.
That's part of the problem is the past couple of months since Brawl's been out consistently, and you can only play it on Wednesday, people have been going to third-party sites to matchmake for Brawl.
Yeah.
And great. Let people keep doing that. I don't know why you would dump money into this. I mean, it's just Wizards trying to get some of the gold out of the economy before Theros drops.
That's exactly what I think it is. I think they're trying to pull them 10 packs that you could buy of Theros, put them into here, play Brawl for the next month. I'll give you even a shiny new card.
Well, and like if they would have announced this 2 months ago when Oko was broken, some people probably would have bought it just because they want to play Magic, but they don't want to play Oko.
Yeah.
But now, Standard's actually pretty fun, so they can just play Standard.
Yeah, so I don't know how I feel about this whole big price gouge for just playing a game mode that should already be available at all times.
Right. If it was 1,000 gold, I'd be like, okay, I will easily throw 1,000 gold at it to get a quote-unquote free card and be able to play Brawl for a month. I would even probably 2,000 gold. How we go. Okay, cool.
But 10,000 gold? That's 10 packs.
No thanks.
That's 10 packs of Theros Beyond Death right there. There could be an Ashiok in there. There could be an Elspeth in there. Could even be one of each basic land.
There could be 5 commons. That's all I need.
You're right. Anything you want in that pack. But yeah.
So, yeah. I think Chase and I are pretty much in agreement that eh.
Yeah, eh. We'll just play each other.
Yeah. their next announcement in the arena game, whatever this article is called, is the Historic suspension list. So basically they are quote unquote suspending. We'll talk about what suspending is here in a second. But they are suspending 4 cards in Historic, and I bet just about everybody can guess what those 4 cards are.
What? Would you say that those 4 cards were also 4 cards banned in Standard in the last 3 months?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Who would have thought?
It's amazing how that works.
Crazy.
So, yes. Oko, Thief of Crowns, Field of the Dead, Once Upon a Time, and Veil of Summer are suspended in Historic. Now, suspended is different than bannings.
Yep, that means they can't go to school and they fail their grades, but they aren't kicked out or expelled from that school. They just can't come back for a little while. So that means for this Historic ranked season, you cannot play with any of these cards. You cannot have any copies of these in your decks because they are suspended. Now, around the time that the next ranked season arrives for Historic, hey, maybe Oko's not that bad. He's got out on good behavior. He's not suspended anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, these 4 cards are staying suspended for a while.
So what really tilts me on this decision is they basically said, hey, you know how we give you guys wild cards for when we ban things? You don't get wild cards anymore. We're going to suspend them, which isn't the same as banning. So we're not, so there's not like taking a card out of your collection. So no wild cards for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's exactly what it is. It's annoying, but whatever. Wizards is going to do what Wizards is going to do. Speak with your pockets.
Their next offering, which is, I mean, this is an actual thing, and I'm fine with this one. So it's a Historic Artisan, which this Historic Artisan format is commons and uncommons only. So it's a brand new format because
it's historic.
It's historic and it's artisan.
I think
I'm assuming artisan has been done at some point.
It has, but it was done a few months ago, and honestly, I was very confused when I played artisan because I jumped in and I was like, oh, they named Popper differently. That's weird. Jumps into it, starts building a deck with commons, builds all these common, like just builds a, you know, a nice little common Popper deck, goes into the queue. What do I see? Uncommon cards. And I'm like, what? You can play uncommons in this format? And my dirtily deck got dirtily stomped. So artisan's an interesting format.
So yeah, artisan, the entry fee for artisan, historic artisan, is 2,500 gold or 500 gems. And the prizes for it is when you get your first through fifth wins, you get a card style, which is Magic Arena's
pretty
kind of
foils.
Yeah, kind of 3D-ish, but it still has the same artwork as the original art. So, but for the first win, you get Wild Growth Walker. Second win, you get Gutter Snipe. Third, you get Cast Down. Four, you get Curious Obsession. And five, you get Militia Bugler. So they got a card from every color.
Yeah.
It's all historic cards. It's all cards that they don't have card styles for currently.
Yeah. I don't mind the list. I think those are all playable cards in general.
I wish. So the good thing about this is you can play it as much as you want. There's not, you win
yeah
five times, then you can't play anymore or anything like that. So if it's a format that you enjoy, you can play it, have fun,
and not play Brawl.
Yeah, it's only 2,500 gold. I mean, I'm assuming, I haven't checked, but I'm assuming you can still get like your daily wins and stuff in this event. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, 2,500 golds for this, I'm okay with. If they did the brawl a day like this, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. See, what kind of rewards would they have to offer for Brawl a day for you to pay that 10,000 gold? I put him on the spot.
You did put me on the spot. I mean, they would have to release like 10 cards, and I would have to be able to get a copy of like each of those cards for me to even think about it.
So like kind of like with the, what was it called? The Eldraine Brawl, where you could play the new Brawl decks,
right?
And you can unlock the cards yeah. from those decks.
Yeah. I mean, that was fine.
Yeah.
Give me more than one card.
Yeah, I think if, you know, they had a nice little prize structure where, you know, you win, and since it's available for a whole month, you could be like, you win 5 games, you win 10 games, you win 15 games, maybe 20 games, and they just have a really nice prize at the end there.
Right. So, yeah.
But they kind of dropped the ball on that. But Historic Artisan seems like a fun format. I'll definitely give it a try. I always liked styles, and styles that you can earn are fun.
Yeah. The next announcement, which is probably the one I'm most excited about, is that they're bringing Ranked Dominaria Draft back.
What did you say? A flashback draft? We're drafting something from back in time? And
yeah,
by back in time, I mean the year of 2018.
Yeah. But yeah, it's basically, they're probably throwing around the idea of doing historic set drafts. So people that weren't playing a year ago have a reason to draft and get the cards for historic.
Don't you know, getting cards for sets is the easiest through drafts because
right.
the bots pass you the rares.
Well,
Most of the time.
The bots don't pass you the rares.
I don't know. I've had a few where they pass me like double, triple rares, and I'm just like, all right, thanks. I need to finish this copy of my collection. All right, that's fine.
That's a discussion for a different day, but the bots are definitely rare drafting heavier now. They don't pass even the junkiest of rares anymore.
Oh, man. But yes, you can relive the Dominaria drafts now through the 16th of January. That's about when Theros comes out on MTG Arena. So my hopes is that they continue this theme up and let us draft more and more sets that are considered historic.
Yep, and it's got the same entry fee and prize structure as any other ranked draft format on Magic Arena right now. And then the last format type thing.
The last event that's on the announcement.
Is the Historic Challenge, which is a challenge that's going to last for, depending on timing, I'm guessing it's going to be the full 3 days. January 11th through January 13th. Maybe not a full.
I think it's a weekend.
72 hours.
I'm pretty sure it's a weekend.
I'm sure that is a weekend. But I'm not sure if it's going to go from 7 a.m. Friday to 7 a.m. Monday.
You don't know if it'll be 72 hours.
Right. It might be a 60-hour event. Who knows? But basically, this is going to be a constructed best of three. It's got another high entry fee of 10,000 gold or 2,000 gems. But what I will say is this event is for spikes.
100%.
That's who it's for. Basically, you play until you get either 8 wins or 3 losses. And the prize for 8 wins is 15,000 gold. So you would be up 5,000 gold already.
Then you could play Brawl.
Yeah. You get 40 historic boosters, which they said you get an even amount of the 4 historic sets. So you would get 10 Ixalan, 10 Rivals of Ixalan, 10 Dominaria, and 10 M19 packs. So, I mean, packs are great. They get you wild cards.
Yeah, and if you already own the whole collection, they give you gems.
So, yeah.
All around good price.
And then as a bonus, you get the Treasure Hunt. I'm assuming you get a copy of Treasure Hunt. This wording was kind of confusing on there.
from what I can tell in the outline, is it looked like it was highlighted like you could click it.
Right. So. Yeah, so I think you get a copy of the card Treasure
Hunt. Maybe it's a card style.
No, I don't think it's a card style, but you get a copy of the card Treasure Hunt and a Gaia's Cradle card sleeve. And then, so basically the prizes go down from there. Once you get to only 4 wins, you no longer get any more historic boosters, but you get some ICRs, which is individual card rewards on Arena, and you get the Treasure Hunt card sleeve instead of the Gaia's Cradle card sleeve. See, that's why I think the Treasure Hunt is the card in the 5-8 win.
So let me counter you on this.
All right.
So from what it looks like, it says 15,000 gold, 40 historic boosters, Treasure Hunt, and Gaia's Cradle sleeve. Card sleeve.
Right, so, there's a comma.
There is a comma. I don't know. I can't understand.
It is confusing at best. We're sorry. It's Wizards' words, not ours.
So there's a possibility if you get 5 wins, you either get the card Treasure Hunt, which is a common, or you get a Treasure Hunt card sleeve.
Does it make much of a difference either way? Probably not.
Probably not.
But then for those spikes that aren't as spiky as they think they are and get 0 wins, you can possibly be paying 10,000 gold to play 3 matches and get 4 historic ICRs and a Treasure Hunt card sleeve.
Woohoo!
That feels pretty bad.
Yeah, for those who don't know what ICRs are, they're just individual card rewards. So you just get four random cards from historic. It's like, they could be rares, they could be mythics, they also could just be 4 commons.
Yep. So, like I said, this is for spikes. I'm okay with the entry fee on something like this because it's for inherently very competitive people.
Yeah. But the question that raises some concern for me is, we already had a challenge, and it was a standard challenge, and it was around when Throne of Eldraine came out, and if you remember, it was free.
Well, yeah. The first one's always free, Chase. I gotta get you hooked.
Yeah, but is the first one on this one free?
No.
Exactly. Now we see the connect. Wizards still doesn't want us to play historic. I'm done. Mic drop.
Well, they're doing a good job of it because I'm not playing it. So anyway, the last thing that they talk about in this article is they're bringing deck sorting soon. They didn't give an exact date. But basically, you'll be able to sort your decks by format, color identity, alphabetically by your name, last modified. Stuff like that. It's a good user interface improvement.
Yeah.
Not needed. But it's good and it's fine.
This kind of announcement, just, you know, for the deck sorting, just, it's a one word response. Neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just neat.
But it's a thing.
Well, anyways, that pretty much covers the topics that we're going to cover today.
Well, real quick, I wanted to do an errata real quick.
Oh, boy.
The Mythic the World Championship is actually in February. I looked it up.
Oh.
February 14th. Uh-huh. Good old Valentine's Day magic.
Huh.
I don't know why they moved it. I don't know. Like I said, the whole Mythic Championship and World Championship stuff just seems random as hell now.
Huh.
It's like they're just throwing darts at a dartboard.
Just a big old calendar. We're throwing it. And then they just throw a cluster and they all land like 1 week apart. And they're like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Yeah. February then. All right. Well, that means there'll be no more official tournaments this for the rest of this year. Not even January. So it looks like the Worlds will be focused on Theros, which should be exciting. I'm excited for Theros and I'm excited for spoilers whenever they come, and we'll definitely be covering them here. But other than that, any last minute thoughts from you, David?
No, the only thing I would say is if you're listening, shoot us some suggestions if you have specific content you're wanting to be covered.
Yeah. We usually talk about current stuff, but we might be introducing a new series
for you guys, we'll
keep it on the low.
Yeah, we're batting around the idea of doing like revisits to Pioneer legal sets so Chase can school me on the stuff that I didn't play beforhand and do some fun. Like,
so speaking of schooling, I need to have one more thought. So real quick, Elspeth hates the sun because the sun god killed her. All right, we're done. See you guys.
Peace out.